From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. North Carolina's U.S. House District 7 stretches from the southeastern coast of North Carolina, encompassing Brunswick, New Hanover, and Pender counties, west to the more rural Columbus, Sampson, Wayne, and Duplin counties. The district also includes portions of Johnston and Bladen County. David Rouser, a Republican historically from Johnston County who recently moved to New Hanover, has represented the district for two terms and is seeking his third. He faces two challengers this year, Democratic candidate Kyle Horton and Constitution Party candidate David Fallon, whom we will meet first today, as the candidates are arranged alphabetically. This is the first election year in North Carolina that the Constitution Party has had a spot on the ballot. David Fallon says he's lived in eastern North Carolina for more than 25 years. He's owned a small business, a construction company, since 1996. He's also served as a high school basketball referee for 26 years and a college basketball referee for 16. This is his second run at elected office, and he joins us now. David Fallon, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
Today's interviews are pre-recorded, which means we are not taking live calls or emails. David Fallon, let's begin with the party that you've chosen to affiliate with. How would you describe where the Constitution Party falls on the political spectrum?
They have been trying for about 10 years working in to get onto the ballot, and I believe North Carolina is the 15th state to adopt it. They're trying to go back to what the conservative values and the Constitution represented from the beginning.
When I look at the principles on the state party's website and I see things like sanctity of life, I think conservative Republican leaning, anti-abortion, for instance, Second Amendment rights, strong supporters. Is that accurate? Is
correct. This Those are a lot of the key core values. You know, the freedom of religion, and even though, not sure how to put that, but yes, the gun control. We're not in for gun control. We're firm believers in the Second Amendment and what it stands for. Protecting yourselves, and it's originally set up to protect us from the government, not so much our neighbors, but. Hopefully all the neighbors stand together and, we wouldn't have a lot of these issues with guns that we do. But
In light of that, there is a base with a conservative base within the Republican Party that also would align with those values. Why is the Republican Party not a place for Constitution Party people like you?
Well, they were. I've been a Republican all my life. Coming up and this new party, it just made sense to change to it. It represented all the values that we stand for, and I believe the other parties originally started out with a lot of those similar values. The Republican core values is there's three or four pages of them, and they represented a lot of the same issues. The difference is the little bit of the corruption that's gone on between and the me mentality for the parties and not what's right for the people.
Can you give us an example of that? Something that's happened recently that you consider corruption and not really representing constituents?
Without getting into specifics, there's obviously you see so much of it with the liberals, with their agendas and just pushing things that we're thinking, okay, why are these people not in jail? A lot of the media, which you probably see and hear more in your position, I'd like to see it get back to where reporters have to either quote sources, speak the truth, speak what's happening, and don't turn it around for an agenda or to make somebody else look bad like they were just trying to do with the Kavanaugh situation. That's a big one there. So,
well, let's take the Kavanaugh situation. A lot of people, wherever people fall on that issue and how that process unfolded, most people seem to agree that it didn't go very well.
True.
That there were a lot of things that went wrong in that process. And it also emphasized the polarization of this country and the fact that people are more divided than ever and are self-sorting more than ever. Do you think that we lose anything by continuing to self-sort and isolate ourselves from people who think differently than we do?
A lot of times, yes, depending on what it is. The country itself with their agendas are different and like to divide. However, as you've seen before, if something comes against this country from an outside source, we band together very well. We have storms, we band together. You know, politics, you know, basically the meaning of it is to come to common cause for indifferences, which people are going to have. So trying to get enough decisions to make the common core what's right for the country and for the people and not for an individual or a specific group.
One of your prime issues, David Fallon, is cracking down on illegal immigration. The Trump administration recently removed temporary protected status from immigrants coming from Haiti, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Sudan. It was 1990 that President H.W. Bush signed the Immigration Act into law, which allows immigrants from countries affected by things like armed conflict or environmental disaster or other extraordinary conditions to live and work in the U.S. until it's safe for them to return home. All four of those countries that just lost their temporary protected status would fall under that rubric. Do you think the United States has any moral responsibility to protect people who are seeking shelter from those things?
Yes and no. I mean, ones that are obviously people like to improve their status or their lifestyle and want to come over. However, there are borders for a reason, and we can't just allow the whole country just to shift in and, you know, take over that much. So legally, I'm all for, you know, people coming in and working and paying taxes along with the rest of us. But given special benefits to the ones coming in that exceed benefits of current U.S. citizens.
What's an example of an immigrant who has a benefit that a U.S. citizen doesn't have?
They give them a lot more to get started, I guess, with health care and just other income, you know, and a lot of these will start working and don't pay as much taxes as they ought to. And in some cases, most of them are legit and hard workers, and I work with a lot of them, and they're good people. So I don't like to see anything bad go to any of them. But there's got to be a gray area that we can do it correctly and without just allowing everybody to come in and, you know, them just bailing on where they're at or their family. But I know one guy that used to be here, and I forget whether it was Mexico or one of those countries that direction, but he was working here and putting his sister through medical school in Mexico at the time. But he was legit with everything, and it was great. But, yeah, the ones that come in and, you know, just all pile up together and don't pay taxes or, you know, other than our local economy, obviously they're paying back into that. But, yeah, if it's done legally, I have no problem with any of it.
And you would have a unique perspective on this because you've had your own construction company since 1996, is it? And we know that in North Carolina, the construction business often uses people who are immigrants, who are not born in the United States. Part of the struggle there is an economic one.
Yep.
We know that if you force a situation where all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, construction costs go up. How do you deal with that as a business owner?
I do a lot of it myself. It's hard to find people that even want to work. There is a labor shortage. Special trades and things there that need to be developed more. So I know there are some trade schools going up for our local areas here that will help. But again, it's trying to find the people that even want to work or want to learn and do and get out from behind a computer or, you know, their phone long enough to do something. I've had a few come out, and when they found out how many hours I worked or what was involved, they didn't last but a couple days. So, you know, and then dealing with any other immigrants that have come in, you know, you have a language barrier and some transportation issues, and there's, you know, finding out are they legal or not. And so, yeah, there's a lot to deal with. I've managed to keep mine pretty small and keep it to one or two employees and myself. But again, finding somebody you can trust and depend on and not have to babysit the whole time, it's a challenge.
One of the key issues for people in the 7th Congressional District, which you would know about as a resident of Pender County, is clean drinking water. It was relatively recently that members of the public learned multiple chemical compounds that are currently unregulated and unable to be filtered out of the water supply with the current technology are in the drinking water supply for several hundred thousand people. We know these compounds are likely dangerous to human health, and the EPA is working now on setting a standard for the ones that fall into the category of PFAS. In light of this, is there a place for regulation in a healthy government? I know one of your key issues is deregulation, but is this an exception, or would you say that market forces could also somehow create a healthy drinking water supply? What would you do with this issue if you didn't have to get consensus?
I'm not sure where it would fall in with the federal versus local government handling all this in the private sector for private drinking water suppliers. Obviously, we need to protect our resources. You know, so if companies are dumping, and, you know, that needs to be regulated somehow or controlled or cleaned before, you know, it goes somewhere. Obviously, anything you have going out has to be disposed of, or, you know, things have to be handled. But, yeah, we got to figure out how to keep it clean, keep the water clean. Obviously, I mean, you can't live without it. And after the storm, whatever was in the river, the fish were trying to swim out of the water instead of staying in. So, and we don't live too far off, and we're on a well. So trying to, you know, what God gave the ground the reason to filter, our natural filter system, you know, I'm really dependent on that right now. So, yeah, some of that needs to be protected.
So if you became the congressman from North Carolina's 7th District, would you support further EPA regulation of things like chemical compounds in the water supply?
I'd have to look into it, but yeah, to get educated on it to see what we could do and not do without, you know, hurting the environment or hurting the companies involved as well. So, you know, to keep all involved. Obviously, you want to keep costs down, but not hide money to not be able to keep everybody safe.
What do you think the funding responsibility of the federal government is when it comes to North Carolina's shoreline preservation or beach renourishment? Do you think that the federal government should continue to fund the preservation of North Carolina beaches?
Definitely help. I think the local towns and areas are responsible first, and if they need help, then, you know, we go to the next level to get assistance. But the beaches are important. I mean, that's another resource, you know, plus with the economy and tourism. So it's important to keep those up and, you know, clean and running and nourished and, you know, keep it all looking nice. So, yes.
The United Nations recently released a climate change report that sounds the alarm and emphasizes the importance of cutting emissions by 45% by 2030 in order to keep the warming of this planet within 1.5 degrees Celsius. Do you share this concern? Why or why not?
I don't know a lot of the details from their end of it yet. I know our ecosystem, our planet, whatever, has cycles. So whether we're in one of those cycles, you know, I'm not sure. obviously the ultimate creator has all this in place for a reason. So obviously we're here to manage and protect it, I guess you should say, take care of it. But yeah, I don't know how much of the emissions and things that are actually affecting.
So you're a little skeptical of the idea that human activity is causing climate change. That's what you're saying.
Some of it could. I don't think overall it's not the main reason for it all. So it's not going to stop it if it is. But I think we're in a cycle, and it's probably, I couldn't say how many years, but you know, it will come back around.
A high priority on the Republican agenda is to do away with Obamacare, otherwise known as the Affordable Care Act. Opponents of that move are concerned that people with pre-existing conditions will not be able to get health insurance. Do you have an answer for that?
Obviously, I don't care for pre-existing conditions. Obviously, with my situation, since I've had the two heart attacks myself, but I don't think government should be regulating people's health care and manage health insurance.
So
I think that should stay.
You would support repealing Obamacare?
Yes.
And that is this segment of the Coastline Candidate Interviews. David Fallon, thank you so much for sharing your views with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Still ahead, Congressman David Rauser and Democratic candidate Dr. Kyle Horton, whom we'll meet next. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.